Okay, we're back. We've got, let's see, we've got the land prepared and got the land planted and managed. It's well tended. The harvesters have come in, the loggers have come in, and with their feller bunchers and other paraphernalia have cut everything down. And now, got to start dealing with fire. Some of the natural elements that tend to destroy woods, there are maybe three kinds. Probably arson, and regular just matches and people being clumsy, and then actual natural fire, or what's called wildfire. And Mr. Thomas is with Division of Forestry, and he is a firefighter. And perhaps what we can do is start by talking a little bit about how you got interested and involved in the forest industry, particularly in firefighting.
Well, it came to me naturally. I never would figure I'd be a forest ranger.
Where'd you grow up?
Right here in White Springs. All right. I used to ride by the fire tower on the way to school, and for 5 years I never looked at it. But then 8 years later, I'm working in it. And I enjoy it. It's dangerous, exciting. You meet a lot of people. You get a chance to travel. And it's a good job.
What kinds of fires have you been working with, and how did you get involved in working with fires? Is that the only thing that forest rangers do?
Forest ranger is the master of all trades. And we build, we fight fire, we plant trees, we do public relations. We have a youth program that go on during the summer, a summer camp. We work with kindergarten, school programs, timberlands. We do all of it.
Really? Gosh, so that's a jack of all trades, master of none. I think that's the way it works. What does a firefighter do?
A firefighter puts out fire.
You work with fire in other ways too, don't you?
Yes, we do what we call pre-suppression firefighting. That's when we apply fire lines to keep fire from getting on other people's land.
Uh-huh. And how do you do that?
With the dozer and the fire line is over there. We have, that's our main fire equipment right there, the dozer with the plow and the truck transport. And we make landowner contacts and we set up fire line plan. In fact, I have one at 3 o'clock today.
Well, really? Where? Around here?
It's in Columbia County.
Oh my goodness gracious. Now, when you go fight a fire, do you have to use special tools? Like you said, you have the bulldozer. And what exactly does the bulldozer do?
The bulldozer, what it do is take away the fuel from the fire.
Okay.
You apply what you call a fire break and hope that when the fire get there, it stops. Sometimes when you have heavy winds and stuff, it don't stop. We have had fire to spot at least a quarter of a mile away from where the original fire was.
And you do that from that's the tower where you...
Where the tower can pick it up. Normally when we're fighting a fire and we have spotting like that, we have an aircraft over us watching for the spot over.
Okay. Huh. Have the equipment. You have to be prepared too.
Yes. As you see, I have my hard hat, my gloves, fire shirt.
What's the fire shirt made of?
It's made out of special material. It's supposed to, what it do, if fire there, it's burned, but if the fire leaves it, the shirt automatically goes out. You don't have to be there patting on it trying to put the fire out.
Okay. Now, do you wear those kinds of trousers, or do you have to wear special trousers too?
We have some fire retardant pants also that mm-hmm. we wear on fire.
Okay. What? How does this helmet work? It looks like it's got an awful lot of equipment on it. Maybe, would you mind just putting it on and showing us how it works?
Okay.
You don't plug it in or anything like that. Just, you know.
Okay, this is our basic helmet. We have a face shield here to keep stuff from hitting us in the face.
Okay, face shield.
And these earphones are for noise, to keep the noise down. And one of our earphones have a speaker in it where we can plug our radio in, which you've been hearing all day long going over there. And that way we'd be able to hear the dispatcher when they're calling us to make sure we're all right on the fire. And it cuts down on the noise, so we'd be able to hear a little bit when we get off the tractor.
Wow, that's great. What is the kind of procedure, I guess? How does somebody see a fire, report a fire, and then how do they get to you, and then how do they tell you to go, you know, to go to the fire? You know, they don't sort of go up to you and say, there's a fire over there. Go. Okay. They don't do that, do they?
No, they don't do that. We have procedures. If someone spots a fire, he can call either the Division of Forestry or the Sheriff's Department or Police Department, and they would in turn call us, and we have dispatchers. Whichever unit is closest to the fire, they will call that unit over the radio, let them know where the fire is, and then we automatically get in, look at our map, pinpoint it, and we head straight to the fire.
What's the first thing you do when you hit that fire?
Do
you get dressed first, or do you go and then get dressed there?
The first thing you do is size it up.
Okay.
When you're riding up to the fire, you look, you notice which way your smoke is drifting. You notice any barriers, you might have a graded road over there that can be a natural barrier, and you wouldn't have to work on that side. You look at which side you have to go into. Once you get out, you dress for the fire. And then you unload your equipment, and you pick your safety route on your way in there in order, if you have to come out, you know which way to go to first. And then you start working the fire.
You work it with hoses at all? Ever with water?
I had one yesterday evening I was able to put out with water. It had a power line that broke and fell down side the road. And as soon as the man got the power off, we have a tank now on the back of our truck. And I was able to hose the water out instead of fire out instead of unloading and tearing up the people's ground.
Huh. What happens if that fire starts coming at you so fast that you can't run out? You panic.
I hate to be in that predicament. But what you do, you look for an area that has the less fuel. Hmm. You look for a place that grassy rather than a bunch of trees together. And we have what you call a fire tent, which was demonstrated yesterday, but I have to keep
Don't worry about it.
Of a fire. We have a fire shelter, which we deploy, and it's made out of aluminum, and it knocks away 95% of the heat when you're up under there. It gets hot, but it won't get, you can be, it's a lot of guys been saved by this year already, and last year it was a lot of them saved by it. Hmm. And you find a clean area, if you have time, you take your shovel or whatever and knock all the little grass out the way. When you lay on the ground and lay up under this, you stay up on it until you feel something cool. As long as you feel heat, you don't even hold the flap up to peep out. You just lay there until it starts cooling off. Then 9 times out of 10, the fire is gone.
Huh. Now, is that sort of thing like a big blanket in a way that you sort of put over yourself and duck?
It's like a sleeping tent. It's triangle. It's big enough if you have two people can get in this together. They recommend one, but if you have to, two can get in here.
It has a name. You call it a fire tent. Do you call it anything else? Have any nicknames for it?
No, not really.
A tater wrapper or shake and bake? Or
a lot of them have it.
Uh-huh.
I just call it safety equipment.
Safety equipment, okay. Anybody have any questions about firefighting? Any questions anybody want to ask? What other kinds of hazards in the woods do you have to be worried about besides fire?
Well, you have poisonous snakes, and you have something we run into a lot often is wasp nests.
Wasps?
Yeah. They have a tendency to make you leave your dojo at times.
Oh, really? Oh, God.
Mostly in the ground. When we plow over, we dig them up, and they get a little angry.
Wow. Gosh, have you had that happen to you a lot?
Oh, pretty good way.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes, there are some areas that have houses there where the ranger can stay there or the fire tower lookout, and they have places you can move your own trailer onto it and live right there at the tower site.
Do many people do that?
Yes, I stayed on the tower site for 4 years. I just moved off onto another state land. But the dispatchers, all the dispatchers, stay within walking distance of the office.
Huh. That's because this is a 24-hour
yes,
job.
Yes, 24 hours.
Now, is your job a 24-hour job?
Unfortunately, yes.
Ooh.
They call me all times of night, 24 hours a day, 365 mm-hmm. days out of the year.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you're working on a fire, are you the only one doing it, or there are others who do it with you?
It's according to how big the fire is. If
okay.
it's a small 10, 15-acre fire, usually one ranger can put it out.
Mm-hmm.
But if the fire get bigger and the terrain get rougher, we usually call in another tractor plow unit. And then if it gets up in the hundreds of acres, then we'll call in like 5 tractor units.
Hmm.
And we have had as high as 30 tractor plow units on one fire.
Wow. Can you tell us a little bit about the worst fire you've ever been on?
The worst one was Crane Swamp down in Volusia County. And that was I think it burned about 70,000 acres down there. And we were working 16 hours a day. And they had night crews working 16 hours. And it took about 4 or 5 months to get that fire out. Okay, the Pin Hook Bay fire. I was on that one. And it was. Yes, sir. We had all our dozers. We had timber companies that had dozers in there. The U.S. Forest Service had dozers. We had 2 helicopters dumping water. And we had a tanker dumping fire retardant.
Wow. If there was a case of arson, let's say, would you actually have the power, and you identified the arson, do you folks have the power to arrest that person? How does that kind of work? You might get into funny situations there, I think.
Well, if we, the rangers, see somebody set a fire, we cannot hold them, but we have a investigator that works for the Division of Forestry. We can call him, and he has the power to arrest the person setting fire.
Has that ever happened much?
Not in Hamilton County. I think Baker County are the only ones that have more trouble with that.
Really? Gosh. What's the most fire-prone county in this area? Is there one? Can you measure it like that?
Baker County and Bradford County have more fires than mostly the other counties.
Why?
That's mostly where we call them fire bugs. That's
the
where
arsons?
They live in. Arson.
Hmm.
They have more grudges in that area than they have anywhere else.
Really? Grudges? Wow.
You have hunters that don't like the timber company because they closed off the hunting right.
Mm-hmm.
So they set fires to get back at the timber company.
There's sort of some kind of like an animosity between the two. It's sort of like the good guys and the bad guys somehow. Okay. Does anybody have any other questions they might like to ask? Are there women firefighters too?
Yes, there are women.
Yeah, there are women
they're
firefighters.
They're mostly down south, but there are women forest rangers.
Really? Why down south?
Maybe they just
happen to live down there. I don't know. I just was wondering. Huh. Okay, well, what I'm going to do is thank you. If anybody wants to talk with Mr. Thomas Roberts, he's going to be, he's over at the booth, over at the firefighting booth over there, and really feel free. And it'd be great if you could actually bring some of your equipment with you, and that way people could see what you're talking about. And,
okay.
And thank you very much. Thank you for your time. And what we're going to do is we'll be back in about 5 minutes to talk about turpentining, and those of you who are interested in that, what we'll do is talk about turpentining and then go on over to the turpentining site so you can see what it works. And we'll be doing that at 1:15. Thank you very much. everything up to fighting the fires, but now we got leftover live trees, so it's time to do something with them. I'd like you to meet E.W. Carswell and Kent Ramsey. And Mr. Carswell is sort of a rumor in his own time, a fine historian of the counties of the Panhandle, most of which had turpentining and forest industries as a part, a very important part of their history. And Kent is sort of the grandchild of that, growing up also in Jackson County. And Mr. Carswell is from Holmes. You're from Holmes?
Oh,
Old Noma.
Yes.
Right, okay, Noma. Now you live in Jackson County. And he's from Holmes, and I'm from Jackson now, so we're sort of all neighbors in a way. But this is the first time I've ever been able to see Mr. Carswell and talk with him. Kent, like I say, is a grandson of the industry. He's one, really is one of the last of maybe three or four turpentiners in the entire northern part of this state. And what I'd like to do is to have Mr. Carswell actually give us just a brief idea of what turpentine industry was and why. And then we can talk about how you got into it, I think, and sort of your basic steps. And then we'll go back on over to the turpentining area and put Kent back to work. So, Mr. Carswell, would you mind giving us a story?
I think it's a very, very interesting thing that it was started in the colonial period by the British, who found out that this tar and turpentine products was very good for their navy, and they used it on their sails and their ropes and their decks and as to use for in the ships as a protective coating, and it actually helped Britain become a naval power and stretch the empire around the world. They used so much of this stuff that they called British sailors Jack Tars, I think, until today. At least they did in World War One. And probably since. And they called the production in that time was in North Carolina largely. And they called North Carolinians today Tar Heels because they produced so much of it at that time. But they used up the trees up there and moved south into Georgia and to Florida and started producing in the latter part of the last century. And they produced it very, very heavily. And over in my present hometown of Chipley, shortly after the turn of the century, for about a decade, Chipley claimed to be the biggest naval stores shipping center in the world. Nobody challenged that, but there was an awful lot of turpentine shipped out of Chipley during that decade. And the naval stores, incidentally, is something the British, that's a name the British gave to it because they used it in the natives. They started off in Florida with cutting the cups in the base near the base of the trees, letting the gum turpentine collect in there, and then they would take it out with a little spatula thing, and put it in their buckets and so forth. But that damaged the trees, and oftentimes after a great storm would come along, the tree would break over, and so finally they came up with a better system that included hanging clay cups on the trees to collect the gum turpentine, and that they broke often, and so finally they changed to tin cups and finally to aluminum cups, and I believe that's what Mr. Rams is using now on his trees. And incidentally, I think I understand that he has the last gum turpentine farm in all of West Florida and make pretty close to the last one in the whole state, so I imagine he could tell you a lot about that.
Basically, I got started in it following my daddy around when I was young and toting him water. Of course, when I got big enough to do anything, I was ready to go somewhere else, but got back in it. I always had a love for it, and there's just something about the spring of the year. You need to be out there. It seemed like putting you up some trees or getting ready to dip. And when I got started in it, there was quite a few people still in it, Bill and Don West over near Graceville, Lewis West, and Millard Ham. On toward the 1980s, the dollar, of course, got so high overseas we couldn't sell any of our rosin or the products. Consequently, the price went down, and a lot of people got out of it again. Well, the economy got a little bit better, and right now we're getting $115 a barrel for it, which is pretty profitable. And most of it's going on right up in Georgia now. I've heard a few people say that they may put up some back in Florida. I hope so. I feel kind of like the lone wolf out there sometimes.
Yeah. Now, where do you take your gum? Now, when you get the stuff that comes out of the trees, that's not turpentine per se. Turpentine has to be created.
Right.
Right.
That's the raw turpentine. Out of that, you'll get your mineral spirits and your rosin, which is two byproducts.
Okay.
So out of a barrel of gum, you'll get about a third of that barrel will be rosin, which is the real valuable part of the turpentine. And the mineral spirits is like you buy in the store.
Okay. All right. And that you have to have distilled.
Right. It's distilled out. The trash and all is removed. It's boiled several times. And what's left over is the mineral spirits.
Okay. And where do you have that distilled?
Batchley, Georgia. It's the only operating still open right now. It's about a 200-mile trip from me over there.
Do you do your own run?
Right.
Up there? You run up there?
I go up there and sell it. They put me some empty barrels on. I bring them home, fill them up over a month or two, and take them back up there.
So you don't go every week to Batchley, Georgia?
No. Okay. No, I certainly don't.
Phew, that'd be quite a long travel. The first steps, it seems that basically what you're doing is you're taking the bark off of the tree, but you're sort of, it's like the outer membrane.
Right. Cambium, you don't cut into the tree anymore like they used to. They'd really, 30 or 40 years ago, the method was to cut into the tree real deep about once a week. And as a consequence, you had a lot of deformed trees. It was bad for the tree.
Uh-huh.
They had the beat-in type gutter, which was bad, and the only penetration on the tree now we do is the nail.
Okay. The nails that hold in the gutter,
right,
as well as
the
one
small double-headed nail.
Yeah, right. The cup as well. Okay. The first step, though, basically, what do you do? Can you tell us a little bit about the tools you use and how you use them to do what?
Well, first of all, you got to find some trees.
Oh, okay.
A lot of people in our area, they've got a lot of timberland. They're paying taxes on it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they, for some reason or other, they don't want to cut it. They'll go to the forest ranger. I've had her contact me several times, and I give them 25%. If I make a barrel, 25% of it's theirs, you know. I make sure it's sold and all. And if we work out an agreement 4 or 5 years, I go in there, and first of all, you start off with your scrape iron. You smooth the bark off so the tin will fit flush up against the tree there. Attach it with a double-headed nail so you can remove it later on. Start streaking it, which is basically you're irritating the tree, making it run down there, the gum. That's how the tree heals itself. In about 3 weeks, the tree will consider itself healed and quit running, so you have to come through, chip it again, and the process starts over again. You do that during the spring and summer while the sap's flowing through the tree real well, and along about November, you go in there and clean off the scrape, and that's it for another year. And in the cool months, you're raising the cups up.
When I went out with Kent one day, and the stuff was just really, it was thicker than creamy frosting.
Yeah.
God, it just was thick, and it was heavy. And now, you know, last time, in fact, I saw you in the parking lot, you said, it's really running now.
Yeah, it's doing
and,
right.
You know, 'cause the heat, and so do you have to take any precautions for yourself when you're out there? Because it would seem with the heat and it's running so well, you kind of got to worry about heat stroke, don't you?
I drank a lot of RCs. Yeah.
You heard him mention our county forester as her?
Yeah.
That was no mistake. She is.
That's right. Yeah, yeah, she is. And there are also women turpentiners. In fact, two were turpentiners that the Bureau worked with who are women, I believe, in the Jacksonville area. That's what I was wondering. Well, let's go see how you do it. Let's go back on over, and then let's just watch the process maybe from beginning to end, if you can do that, okay? Come on, let's go on over.